I'm JP Duthier.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic.
Hello, Kiki. I am Tuesday, your personal podcast companion.
I don't think I'm satisfied with my care.
Before we get to that, we are actually a little behind the scenes here. We are actually recording this Wednesday afternoon, hours after the premiere of Loki on Disney Plus. We've been talking a lot of Marvel this past month. A lot of Marvel.
And today will be no different.
So, Kiki, what is your thoughts of episode one of Loki?
Pros, Loki, almost everything else. Cons, they're trying to make Owen Wilson a thing.
They've already made Owen Wilson a thing. He's Lightning McQueen.
Yeah, but Cars doesn't count because Cars is stupid. Cars is stupid. Stop trying to make Cars a thing. It's an awful
There's a whole
movie.
Land in Disneyland about Cars, though. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's dumb. If you want to know why we haven't done that movie series yet, it's because that's my feeling on it. I don't need to rewatch it. He's dumb. I know how you can have a punchable face, and Owen Wilson definitely has a punchable face, but how do you also have a punchable voice?
Wow.
And I figured out what it was. Like, it's because Owen Wilson is not an actor. He's just an Owen Wilson in a costume. Owen Wilson is not Mobius. It's just, I watched those scenes and I'm like, wow, here's Loki, Asgardian god of mischief, taken from the frost giants, missing his beloved mother, you know, all this kind of stuff, like the torment, the rage, the pathos. And there's Owen Wilson, douchey guy who lives in the Hollywood Hills. Like, it's like he does not fit in the MCU at all. But everything else in the show is brilliant. I really like the little details, like the propaganda posters that are just on the back walls of everything in the TVA. They're amazing, and I can't wait to see, like, full-size versions of those to see what all those propaganda posters say. They're very creepy 1950s designs. I get a lot of kind of Fallout universe from this.
I was gonna say Fallout, yeah, especially with the technology that they're using. Despite that they're this advanced society taking care of the sacred timeline, they're using technology from the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, there's a little bit of cultishness going on with the timekeepers. You know, the sacred timeline kind of thing and the idea. It's also a bit meta with the idea that these are the people who write your story.
Yeah, free will doesn't exist.
It really felt like kind of this is the writer's room of the universe. It almost felt like at some point Loki's gonna jump out of the Marvel universe and show up and be like, no, Kevin Feige, I'm the one who writes my story, you know?
Loki kills the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Make that movie.
It is interesting. Oh, and there was a little bit of Kiki called it. I don't know if you noticed that. But in last week's episode, I predicted something. It didn't happen exactly as I predicted it. I wanted a certain character to show back up and say something, and instead they gave it to Owen Wilson. Not a fan of that. Really not a fan of that. Still holding out hope. But if you go back and listen to last week's Avengers episode, there is something that I'm like, I really want them to follow up on this bit, and they kind of did. So I'm calling a W on that one.
Also, this is protecting the sacred timeline, as in, it's kind of a spoiler, but a single timeline. Something's going to happen in this show that's going to lead to Doctor Strange. I know it.
Yeah, I do think that this is going to directly tie in, I think, with the end of WandaVision and leading into Multiverse of Madness. I think going forward, overall, and with no spoilers, I think there were a couple of things that, in the first episode, they feel like missteps in the first episode, but given the timey-wimey nature of the series, I'm wondering if it might loop back around, and by the final episode we'll be going, oh.
But yeah, all in all, I really enjoyed that first episode. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this, you know, and will it tie into future events? We've already seen what they can do with WandaVision. We've seen what they can do with the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Let's see what this third go-around, this third series from Marvel Studios can do. They have a lot to live up to.
I just hope that Loki remembers that all time cops are bastards.
Anyway, thumbs up at first episode of Loki. Gonna keep watching. Moving on, we are going to today's main feature, Big Hero 6, which is a special request from my brother David, who was a guest host last week. He wanted us to watch one more Marvel movie. And Big Hero 6, despite being a Marvel property, is definitely not a well-known one.
And not part of the MCU.
No. There, basically, what I was able to read up is there was talks about trying to connect it to the MCU, but they ultimately dropped it and just decided to do their own thing, which is for the better.
Oddly connected to Zootopia, but not the MCU.
Hmm.
There is a nod to this film in Zootopia. Apparently, the Buffalo police chief, I believe it is, mm-hmm. has a calendar with a picture of San Fran, the city.
San Francisco.
Yeah. I call it San Froyo because I really do not like the portmanteau they come up with and I never can remember it. So it's always San Froyo to me because it makes more sense.
Yes, this fictional world where America and Japan are one and the same. So Tokyo and San Francisco is San Francisco. After Disney bought Marvel in 2009, we talked about that, then head of Disney, Bob Iger, encouraged everyone at Disney to use the Marvel property. Hey, we have these Marvel characters, let's use them. And we get our director, Don Hall, wanted to do something with the Marvel properties, but he wanted to do a lesser known one because it would allow them to do whatever they wanted, pretty much. If you use a well-known property, you have expectations. Fans will have expectations. Like if they did Walt Disney's Iron Man and they changed everything around, there would be so much anger from Marvel fans over changing one of Marvel's iconic characters like that. By doing Big Hero 6, this little-known comic book from the late 90s that even the hardest of hardcore comic fans will have real trouble remembering, no one's going to care. Very similar to what Marvel themselves would do with Guardians of the Galaxy. Such a lesser-known hero team that even the hardcores don't know, so they can do whatever they want.
I honestly did not know that this was a Marvel property until after I'd seen the movie, I think.
Yeah, the Marvel logo doesn't appear anywhere in this movie.
I think halfway through the movie, I was like, why does his dad look like Stan Lee? And then at the end of the movie, I was like, why does his dad sound like Stan Lee?
Because you need your Stan Lee cameo in every Marvel movie. So, who are the Big Hero 6? They were created in the late 90s as Marvel wanted to have an all-Asian superhero team. And because they had the American team and the X-Men, and they have their Canadian counterparts in Alpha Flight, so why not do a Japanese team? And originally, they kind of were mutants, with their powers then changed for this film to kind of circle around that whole deal with Fox, because Disney did not own Fox at the time. Because originally, two of the characters were characters from the X-Men, Sunfire and the Silver Samurai. But eventually we get the six that we know of, Go-Go, Honey Lemon, Hero, Baymax, Wasabi, and Fred. All of them originally Japanese. Obviously for this movie, they decided to change them up, have a more multicultural team. Wasabi, you know, became a black guy. Fred became a white guy. Honey Lemon became Latina, with Go-Go and Hero staying Asian. Their powers, of course, changed. Hero, still a boy genius in both versions. Biggest change was Baymax. In the comics, Baymax was a bodyguard robot built on the brain patterns of Hero's deceased father. Also, comic book Baymax can go from a robot and shapeshift into a dragon, which would have made this movie a whole lot different.
Yeah, I mean, I generally approve of dragons, so that sucks that we could have had a dragon. I always think dragons are better than not dragon.
Fred, in the comic books, he was known as Fredzilla because he literally had the power to change into a monster, which they kind of tease in the movie.
Yeah, the thing about Fred's power, I guess, kind of makes more sense in the fact that all the rest of them seem to have these kind of armor, like really cool, sleek looking armor that makes them look like a superhero team, whatever. And then Fred looks like a cosplayer dude that's just following them.
He's a science fanboy in this movie. He's not even a scientist.
Well, yeah, but it's like, you're planning on going into battle, and I get that you want to look cool and everything, but wouldn't you go for more like a Power Rangers kind of thing? Like maybe a helmet with some teeth on it or whatever, some gloves, maybe elongate them a little bit with like some sharp pointy claws or whatever. But he goes for like giant puffy mascot suit, and I get that he's the school mascot and he's used to moving around and stuff like that, so it makes slightly more sense, but that cannot be the thing you want protecting you in a battle.
I think he just wanted to look like a monster. It even says, turn me into create a serum that'll turn me into a monster. So let's get into who's in this movie while we're here.
We have, as Baymax, obviously the star of the film, we have Scott Adsit, who is a comedian and writer. I probably best know him because of his work with Adult Swim. He was the father on Moral Oral. Yeah, back when Adult Swim had good things on the channel. And then he also worked again on Mary Shelley's Frankenhole when the channel stopped having good things on the channel. He shows up occasionally as a character actor, just, you know, guest star in the background of various things. So he showed up in, you know, Malcolm in the Middle, Ally McBeal, Monk. He did some voices for Robot Chicken, again, for Adult Swim, Aqua Teen for Adult Swim. He does occasional guest spots on John Hodgman's podcast. So, you know, that's kind of the vibe he's in. Interestingly, he also, hosts, like, panels at conventions and stuff because of his, affiliation with kind of geek culture. because he's kind of in geek culture in that sort of way, he also has another connection to the Marvel Universe. There is an official agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Deadpool comics called Agent Scott Adsit.
Hmm.
And he is a recurring character who just shows up now and then and has been for several years now.
Kind of makes me sad we never got that Deadpool series that you could have Scott Ass playing Scott Ass.
Yeah, maybe. He's a pretty fun and witty dude. If you ever get the chance to see him on a panel, he shows up at Dragon Con a lot. And, you know, if he's sitting on a panel, you know you're in for a good time. As Hero, our kind of main protagonist there, he is supposed to be 14 in the movie, and when they said that, I went, wow, you drew him like a 10-year-old. Because he does not look 14. He is voiced by Ryan Potter, who was on a Nickelodeon series called Super Ninjas. Did you ever see that one? Because that was after my time. And is now on the series Titans.
Who's he playing on Titans?
Beast Boy.
Ah.
Which I have not seen. Live action DC shows have not really been much of a hit for me. So. But that tends to be kind of his two big claims to fame. We're always kind of interested when we run into people who have made a name for themselves both in a Marvel context and a DC context. So he's another one to add to that list. So, as his brother and Baymax's creator, Tadashi, we have Daniel Henney. He started out on a Korean drama called My Lovely Samsoon. Then came over and was known more for X-Men Origins Wolverine, actually, is kind of his first entrance into Marvel, and he played Agent Zero. Showed up on a show I really liked, but got canned very quickly, called Revolution. Really good post-apocalyptic dystopian thing over on NBC. So that's kind of where I saw him first. He is supposed to be in the upcoming Wheel of Time TV series, which is supposed to be coming, but as with all things Wheel of Time, I think it's one of those everybody's going to believe it when they finally see it. Moving on, as Go-Go, we have Jamie Chung. She has shown up a couple of times, both in Disney and Marvel. For Disney, she showed up on the series Once Upon a Time as Mulan. She was the first live-action Mulan. And then her first Marvel thing that I know of actually happened for Fox before the merger. She played one of those mutants we couldn't talk about in the MCU for a long time. She was Blink over on The Gifted, series that I really liked. But Jamie Chung has recently just gotten a bit more notoriety because she was in Lovecraft Country. She played an amazing character named Gia. I like her. She's good. When she shows up and stuff, I like it. As Wasabi, we have Damon Wayans Jr. Most of you will probably be familiar with his father or uncles. So he is from the Wayans acting family. He got his start in the family movie Blank Man that starred his father. He did a lot of other films that were kind of Wayans family movies, but this is kind of the first thing I think he kind of got on his own merit, maybe. Recently, just in the past year, he was in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. So, as Honey Lemon, we have Genesis Rodriguez. She was a telenovela actress, actually. I would probably butcher all of these. Prisionera, I believe, is that one. Dame Chocolate. Doña Barbara. And she also, in America, did Entourage, the TV series Time After Time, that was a time travel series. Tusk, the Kevin Smith body horror film, where the guy gets turned into a walrus. Yeah.
She also dubbed Honey Lemon for the Spanish dub of the movie.
And she continues to voice Honey Lemon for the Big Hero 6 series as well. She has the role of Perfuma on She-Ra. She will be in season 3 of The Umbrella Academy. Yeah, I want to see that. So, rounding out the rest of our team here, as Fred, the kind of odd one out, as he's not a student at the school, he's just the guy who is the mascot and hangs around the team, we have TJ Miller. TJ Miller is a comedian and actor. He got his start in the movie Cloverfield, and he also was the voice of Toughnut in the How to Train Your Dragon films. Most people will know him from Silicon Valley, I guess. That's probably his first, like, really huge role. His first introduction to Marvel was in Deadpool. As, you know, Deadpool's kind of also wise-talking friend. And as we sometimes have to do on this show, he decided to turn into an entire satchel of Richards. So yeah, here's where it gets a little dark. He got into an argument with his Uber driver. Apparently the Uber driver was a supporter of the previous occupant of the White House. Miller was not, and they came to blows over the matter. That was settled out of court. It got a little worse after that when he was caught up in the Me Too movement. When previous allegations... This is in 2017, but the allegations were from 2001 when he was in college. A woman accused him of sexual assault. Apparently it began consensually and it did not end that way. I will go no further. He had already graduated by the time the accuser came forward, but the accuser's story was found believable enough that he was expelled kind of post-graduation. Take that for what you will. Things continued going after that when it found out that he responded to a trans woman who was a film critic. She apparently wrote a critique he didn't like, so he decided to send her a bunch of transphobic hate mail, including using her dead name, slurs, misgendering her. Transphobe's gonna transphobe. And then it really came to a head when he was arrested for making fake bomb threats on an Amtrak train. He sent in a report that some female passenger had a bomb in her bag. So apparently he had an argument with a woman and decided calling the cops on her and trying to get her arrested was the way to handle this. Apparently the final allegation, not as bad as that one, was that one of his co-workers on Silicon Valley did also put out into the press that he was a bully, and she kind of generally accused him of inappropriate and unprofessional behavior, but I don't really have more specifics than that, other than just he wasn't good. Because of all of these various things, specifically the bomb threat and the sexual assault, he lost his job with DreamWorks on the How to Train Your Dragon series.
And the movie, yeah. The final movie.
Yeah, the final movie. I meant the film series in general, excuse me.
Oh,
okay. Okay. But yeah, so he lost his deal with DreamWorks. It seems that he missed out on other opportunities as well, but not necessarily fired, to my knowledge. But it seems that maybe he was passed over for some opportunities. His star has definitely fallen. As it turns out right now, we don't really know where he stands with Disney/Marvel. Mm-hmm. As they're not in gearing up for production on either Big Hero 6 or Deadpool at the moment, we don't know, you know, he wasn't doing the series anyway, the TV yeah. series for Big Hero 6, so that wasn't a going concern for him, so he wasn't really in danger of losing that job. It will be interesting to see when and if Deadpool or Big Hero 6 gets another outing in film, if TJ Miller returns, and if he does, will anybody care? Will it cause a boycott? Will they get Tignataro to replace him? I'm kind of hoping maybe for the last one it would be interesting just suddenly hear Tignataro's voice as Fred. It always sucks when we have to cover like the darker parts of these stories, but it is something that studios have to think about now. So moving on from that, as Robert Callahan, the professor and head of the robotics program for the school they all go to, we have the legendary James Cromwell. Once again, I don't really know how to introduce some of these legendary actors. They are in everything. Babe, I guess, is probably one of the major turning points for people of our generation.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do.
Yeah. Of course, if you're a Star Trek fan, Zefram Cochrane, The Green Mile, he had a great run on 6 Feet Under. Angels in America, he did such a good job in. Recently, he's been in Succession over on HBO. He did the one series of American Horror Story. He hasn't done any other ones, but he was in the second series, Asylum. And the last one we're really going to talk about is as the caretaker for Hiro and Tadashi, Aunt Cass, the guardian there for the two boys. We have Maya Rudolph. Love Maya Rudolph. Mm-hmm. I think everybody first kind of knows her from Saturday Night Live, but she's also done so many movies. Idiocracy, 51st Dates, Bridesmaids. And then she also does a lot of voice acting now. She's in the Shrek movies.
I believe she recently did The Mitchells vs. the Machines for Netflix.
Yeah, she did that as well. And then she did The Judge in The Good Place recently on television. So good in that role. So, love her. Always good. She does such a good job in this, too. She's so enthusiastic and bubbly in this one. And, of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't name drop two other people who are in this who we talk about a lot. Like we said, it's a Marvel movie, so you can't get away without a Stan Lee cameo, and it's a Disney computer animated movie, so you gotta have Alan Tudyk in it. Alan Tudyk is in here as our good luck charm. He plays Alistair Cray, the kind of CEO tech guy that wants to buy Hero's invention. So, yeah.
All right, let's kind of. This is a well-known movie. I don't think we need to handhold anyone. So let's kind of.
And if you haven't seen it, go watch it now before we spoil anything. It's a really fun ride. I think you'll like it. Bring the kids. It's really good for small children. A lot of the ones we talk about are for, like, older kids, especially the Marvel movies we've been talking about are kind of for, like, the PG-13 crowd. This one's good for, like, your 6 and 7-year-olds, you know?
Yeah. A good superhero movie for the kids. Let's kind of talk about Hero, because this is kind of his movie. The child prodigy, the kid that graduated high school at 13. Very similar to Tony Stark, when we talked about him, how he graduated high school at an early age.
I really think of him more as a Peter Parker.
Kind of. But, as far as I know, Peter Parker didn't graduate high school early.
Well, he didn't, but personality-wise, he feels more like a Peter Parker to me.
Ah. So we have Hero, boy genius, but he has no desire to kind of focus in a way. Like, he doesn't want to go to college, he doesn't want to get a job, all he wants to do is build robots and fight in back alleys.
Which is legitimate. I don't know why we don't really have this now. I mean,
there was the Robot Wars show.
Yeah, we have BattleBots. And, I mean, I do have a friend who's been on BattleBots several times. But this is, like, just, you can build a bot in your home and go to an alley and make bank. Because Hero is making bank.
Hero takes advantage of him being small and him being a kid, that they think he's not that threatening. And then he just uses to an advantage and just turns it up and his bot just kills.
No, he's got a hustle. Like, this kid is like a pull shark. He really is. This is a classic hustle. Because he's coming in as like, this is my first fight. His bot is built to look, like, really small and non-threatening.
It looks like a toy. Like a kid's toy.
It really does. He's got, like, a very... Even his controller is meant to look very small and delicate. Mm-hmm. He loses very quickly with a very small amount of money. He puts up a very small amount of money into the pot first. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, come on, it was my first fight. Let me try again. I've got more money. And then he pulls out like a wad. He pulls out like a roll, you know? And all, and of course the guy's greedy and the kid looks like a pushover. So he's like, okay, I will take your wad of money, tiny pushover child. And I'm like, dude, this is a classic scam. This is Scam the Rube 101. How do you not know you're being played here?
This is not the first time Hero's done this. You gotta think about that.
It's yeah, you not do not get done a role like that from This Is Your First Time Out. The problem is that Hero should have, like, worked his way up. Keep talking the guy up, you know. It lose progressively larger amounts of money over a longer time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he puts the entire wad up the second time out and just destroys the guy in seconds. And the guy immediately knows he's been played and calls out the hired goons.
I mean, it says a lot about Hero that he just has no, for lack of a better term, you know, no. Unlike, for example, Tony Stark. Tony Stark went to college. Yes, he mostly had relations with women at college, but he mostly, at the heart of that, Tony Stark did want to protect the world. Yes, it was really through weapons and then through Iron Man and all that stuff, but Hero just doesn't want to do that. He just, I want to build my bots, I want to fight, and I want to make money. I don't really want to use my knowledge and my skills to better anything.
But let's look at the, you know, material conditions of these two people. Tony gets to dream big because he's, like, one of the richest guys on the planet. That money's already going to be there. So, like, Tony, what do you want to do? Well, I want to chase women and maybe one day I will change the world. Hero, what do you want to do? I want to make quick cash hustling dudes in an alley. Because it's kind of obvious that the cafe is... I mean, it seems stable-ish. But... where are their parents?
Dead.
This is already a family that has known sudden upheaval trauma.
Technically not Hero. He even says his parents died when he was 3. So the parents have been gone 10 years at this point.
Do you know generational trauma, though? I mean, if you grow up with, like, your aunt and your brother being like, yeah, but things can change in an instant. Yeah, but you never know where the next meal is coming from. Yeah, but they could walk out the door and never come back home. Mm. It doesn't matter if you remember the trauma or not. I mean, trust me, you know, it's a thing. So, it's obvious that Hero's got stuff in his background that is making him not plan that far ahead. Now, it seems that Tadashi being a little bit older... maybe whatever happened to their parents, maybe that's why Tadashi wants to build Baymax. Maybe their parents lingered a bit in whatever happened to them.
Yeah, the Disney trope of the dead parents.
Yeah. Disney, can we please stop that?
So, but it's not until they get to the nerd school, as Hero calls it, that he actually wants to do something. Like he sees the other of his, you know, his future team members making cool stuff with science, and he all of a sudden, I need to go here because this is cool science stuff.
I'm not sure that's entirely it, because he's not into it until he meets the professor.
And even says that's his kind of his idol is the professor. Like he gushes over his robot. And said, yeah, well, that guy invented the design you're using.
You know, that's the guy who invented the tech you're using to hustle, you know, kind of ridiculous dudes in alleys. And I think the professor's thing about, if you want to take the easy way out, if you want to do the easy hustle in the back alley, then go do it. It's there. I'm not going to judge you for it. My daughter wanted the same thing. You know, the first mention we get of the daughter, which is interesting. You know, my daughter, when she was younger, that's what she wanted to do too. But if you want to make a difference...
yeah.
If you want to push a boundary, if you want my help to become the next me, then come up with something, show me what you got, come back.
And then it's, I have to go here. So win the science fair and you get a scholarship. It's possible that's how Tadashi got into the school himself. Because, like you said, I don't think that cafe is making enough to send Tadashi to that big of a school.
The interesting thing to me is that if... I mean, I hate to say it, but we've talked before about Tony Stark specifically. Tony wouldn't have needed this, but if Hiro is such a fast learner, is able to graduate at 13, he should have been headhunted by every school in the nation. They should be throwing scholarships at him already, science fair or not. That's the thing I don't understand. I know that plot point wise.
But as I said, he had no interest in going to college until he met his idol.
When the science fair or not, like, the second that this prodigy goes, I want to go here, there should have been money. I work at a college. I know how this works. Like, you know, that's good PR for a college.
Let's kind of play into that, because we've kind of talked about this with Iron Man 2, is that you've dealt with these kind of gifted kids.
I mean, not a lot of them, but I've run into them once or twice over my life. You know, they're very rare, and I live in an incredibly small area, so, you know.
But, you know, what would you do if you were in that situation? You're a teacher at the school, and here's this genius kid.
I mean, you immediately go up the chain and you go, hello, we have a once-in-a-lifetime prodigy. You know, because that's what Hiro is. I mean, that's how he's presented in the film, as a once-in-a-lifetime prodigy. He wants to come to our school, find the money. Because, I mean, I hate to say it, but when the PR is that good, that they can find the money. You know, it's there if you call enough media outlets, if you know how to spin that story, you know. So, orphan boy. Orphan boy from hard luck circumstances whose aunt is a single parent local business owner. I mean, come on. Tell me that is not the quote unquote feel good local interest story of the century right there. That school
you're right,
is going to want
right.
it.
If you explaining it like that, yeah, you're right.
It's just... So I know why the plot wants this to happen. I'm just saying this is one of the least realistic parts of the film to me.
And we get his idea of the microbots, that these little robots that connect to the mind and build whatever you want, which, on paper, is great. In practice... will likely never happen because so many construction people will be out of business. Therefore, no corporation would take that.
I immediately thought this would be... Both Baymax and the Microbots are for two very different but very related reasons. Mm-hmm. Things that would immediately make my life... not only livable, but thrivable in a way it is currently not.
Let's talk about Baymax that we got here. He's the invention of Tadashi, this portable, personal healthcare provider that he knows all of these medical things. He can summon, you know, he can pretty much do... he's pretty much a local doctor, you know, the same kind of doctor you go to your regular doctor's office. And he can scan your body and find out what's wrong with you. And he said, Tadashi said he's going to help a lot of people. Like, you could, in theory, put Baymax in a foreign country where maybe the Doctors Without Borders may not be able to go. And you put him there, and he's already helping people with anything.
You don't even need to do that in a foreign country, although it would be very helpful. I mean... putting that in America right now.
Oh yeah, like a inner city, or like you said, a small town, who may not be able to get to the big hospitals, or maybe someone who can't afford the big hospitals. Here's this robot that will do it for you.
Who can't afford a local doctor?
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of times that I, you know, I personally have to go like, well, I could be dying, but I don't know if I can afford a trip to the ER. Like, just have Baymax walk through and do a quick scan and be like, you know, you are just having a panic attack. You do not need to go to the ER. Here is a lollipop. You know, like, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I just, especially if you could just have that in the corner of your house.
Are you kidding me? And it's easy transportable because, you know, Baymax can shrink. We saw that. And that carrying case, it's a cartoon, so anyone could probably be carrying the case. Even though he's a very...
I mean, put that in the back of an ambulance?
Yeah.
You know, Baymax scanned this person, you know. There are 3 broken bones in the left leg, you know. It, like, okay, I already know that before I get to the hospital. Mm-hmm. All right? You know, I don't have to wonder, you know, well, I mean, obviously, you know, a trained EMT can tell you that, you know, there are broken bones probably in the left leg and I need to immobilize it and things like that. I mean, of course. But you don't have to wait to get them to a hospital to get them to an x-ray machine or what. Just a Baymax can just tell you that immediately. That's very useful information to know, especially if it could, you know, come close to severing an artery or, you know, it's, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you don't have to do an EKG anymore to tell, you know, like, am I having a heart attack? Yes, no. You know, it's like, that's incredible. You know, here's a suitcase size thing you could just have in every ambulance or every home or once per neighborhood. Just open the door and shout, ow, and here comes a Baymax toddling along to give you... The only thing that's a problem is it's not very fast, so in an emergency situation, you may want it to be hit slightly faster.
That's part of the... That could use some redesign, Tadashi, but yeah. I get why he did it, because, oh, it's got to be cute and non-threatening.
Yeah, but there are some situations where it could stand to be a little bit quicker.
I am not fast.
Yeah.
You and me both, Baymax.
Yeah, I feel that. But even in non-emergency situations, like that part of the movie where he heats up mm-hmm. to help warm them after they fall into the cold water, mm-hmm. I have a condition where I get these attacks Chills. where my body temperature drops. And right now I have to keep all of these like electric blankets and coats and stuff inside my house because when my body temperature drops, I have to cover myself in all these layers and electric blankets and stuff to try to bring my body temperature back up. But like when I'm away from the house, I can't carry all that crap with me very easily. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in a restaurant or something and my body temperature drops or I'm away on a trip or something, it's kind of dangerous and very painful and, you know, but like,
you would have to carry like a coat everywhere you go.
And I do. I mean, I really do. I don't know if you've ever noticed that when I'm on trips, but I always like, even in the, you rarely see me on summer trips, but, so it's a little less noticeable in winter time, but even in the middle of summer, I have like coats and blankets and stuff with me. Sometimes gloves and everything because of that condition. And it's sometimes incredibly conspicuous and gets me kind of mocked and stuff. But like if there was like a Baymax in every restaurant or whatever, and I could just call one over and be like, I need a giant huggable heat pad right now.
Yeah.
Man, that'd be amazing. The thing about the microbots is, can you imagine that as a mobility aid instead of a wheelchair?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have, like, a ramp or a non-functional elevator or whatever. use a bunch of those and it just walk for you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter the terrain. You know? If you can't, if you have problems lifting an object, you know, with your...
Get the
your,
Macross to lift it for you, yeah.
It could lift it. I mean, that's incredible. It could just be an exo suit that just does things.
Kiki in a microbot mecha.
I would promise to use my powers for mostly good.
You with Iron Man powers, I don't know.
But I mean, it wouldn't even need to be, you know, something as incredible as that. But you're right, it could be used for construction, it could be used for all that kind of stuff. But when I look at these two inventions, I see it on a level that I don't think most people think of. You know, people think of as like, oh, look at this giant world-shattering invention. They could be used as great, horrible weapons to destroy the Earth. And I'm like, I could leave my house. That'd be incredible. Like, I could go outside sometimes. And, like, what sad, pathetic lives some of the rest of you leave that you look at movies like this and you're like, I could destroy the world. And I'm like, I could live. Mm-hmm. Like, y'all need to have your head examined, because some of these things would be great. If these things existed, man.
So, let's kind of, well, again, we are going a little bit of a spoiler here. What your, let's go with what Callahan uses with them. Okay, first off,
spoiler is alert, Callahan's the villain. There, we ripped the Band-Aid off. Ow.
Ow. So, it's like, we never really give confirmation in the movie whether Callahan started the fire or not.
Oh, he totally did. It says very, very plainly, he doesn't say the words, I started the fire, but he is standing in the middle of the fire, prepared with the bots. And when Hiro says, Tadashi went in to get you, Callahan's response is, well, that was his mistake.
Yeah, so Callahan, okay, let's go with that. Callahan starts the fire, steals the microbots, uses the microbots to protect him from the fire. And uses this trope that has come from Disney in these years of the twist villain has both it's been both a blessing and a curse for these movies. That you have, yes, Callahan's the villain, but it's coming in a way, it's coming from a place of love. He lost his daughter. And he blames, you know, he blames Cray for it. So he wants to get his he sees these microbots, and his thought is, I can get revenge for my dead daughter. Once Hiro finds out that Callahan started the fire, killed Tadashi, that's all he wants to do. He wants to kill Callahan right then and there. While Callahan is also getting his plan to kill Cray.
I think the best villains are always the ones that are not entirely wrong. And he's not wrong that Cray is also the bad guy.
And that's another thing. Cray never gets any kind of comeuppance in this movie.
Well, he kind of does. I mean, his entire company is destroyed. At least the building is. And all of the projects they were working. I mean, he lost a lot in that final attack. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say he got zero comeuppance. Also, there's probably going to be some kind of government investigation once the daughter is awake and able to testify against him. That maybe, like, hey, I knew something was wrong. I radioed back. He ignored me, maybe. I don't know. we're kind of given a truncated version of that scene.
What we see in the security footage is they realize there's an error, and Craig just says, it's within the parameter, if he can keep going. Well, he could easily said, we're going to stop this test because it's not safe.
Yeah, you can see him overriding the tech that tells him. Because the implication is that it is not within the parameters. The way Alan Tudyk plays the scene is really brilliant. And the way the scene is animated is also really brilliant. Mm-hmm. Because the implication of the scene is, but it's within parameters. With the unspoken implication of, right? Wink, wink.
And we have all of these. Yeah, we're not going to stop this test just because it's not working in front of all of these people who could give me money to sponsor this thing.
I mean, the general came all this way.
Yeah.
You know. So the tech actually gives him a look like the tech wants to say something else. And then there is just a moment between them, and then he goes, you know, it's a really subtle moment.
Like, he knows that if he had said no, he would have been fired and replaced with someone who would have said yes.
Yeah, it's a very much a, I'm not looking for you to be honest, I'm looking for a yes man. Mm-hmm. So the movie, I think, while it's not super explicit in it, and I think it's easy to miss if you're not looking, you know, I think if you're just casually watching it, but I think if you're paying attention, it's pretty obvious that Cray did overstep the safety protocol. It wasn't within parameters. He ignored the safety protocol. And Cray is absolutely the bad guy. We also see him be explicitly the bad guy when he tries to steal from Hero.
Oh, yeah. And that is also the misdirection. Even, he steals one of the microbots, presumably to reverse engineer the technology so he can have it anyway without ever having to hire or pay Hero for his own technology. Which itself is based off Callahan's technology.
Yeah, because when he says, oh, wow, can I see one of the microbots? And then he's busy kind of feeding Hero compliments and everything. And it's really subtle, but he palms the microbot. And then he's so quick talking that he pockets it. You know, it's kind of that magic move, you know? Sleight of hand, and he makes it disappear. But Tadashi is the one that's watching. And he's the one that notices that Cray never gave it back. And Cray plays it off like, oh yeah, I totally forgot. Of course, here's your thing. But Cray is mad that he's been caught.
Yeah. He's also mad that he got told no.
Yeah, and
which kind of feeds into the audience that Cray could be the villain. Yokai, although that word is never said in the movie, but apparently the villain is named Yokai.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's implied through dialogue, through implications and various in the movie that Cray is the villain. Even Fred says it's classic villain 101 of the evil corporate overlord becoming the villain. Which makes Callahan's reveal supposed to be shocking.
Yeah, but my point is that is not... Cray is not Yokai. Mm. He is not the masked man with the microbots. But Cray is also the villain. There are two villains in this movie.
You're right.
It's just right. That he's not the villain that they are initially chasing.
And even when threatened with his own life, all Cray can do is think business. Like, I will give you whatever you want. I'll give you money. I'll give you this, that, and the other if you let me go free. when all Callahan wants is his daughter back.
Yeah, this is a very Princess Bride moment, you know. I will give you money, I will give you power, I will give you anything you ask for. I want my daughter back, you son of a, you know, it's like...
Yeah.
So, the reason why I really like Callahan as the villain is that he's not wrong. And everything he does seems justified up until he tries to kill people.
Yeah.
I'm kind of okay with him destroying a building.
But there are still people in that building when he starts to destroy it. There's still people outside during that presentation that Cray is having.
I mean, yeah, but I think the implication is that they're all outside the building, and he's making such a big scary presentation as he's setting up the Stargate that they're gonna run away. I don't think he was really intending to kill anybody in that final scene except for Cray.
He never intended to kill anybody, but and this is a Disney film, so no random person is gonna go flying into there, because it's a Disney film and we need to keep this PG.
Oh my God, Bob, we're still at his desk.
Yeah.
If this Why was did you Marvel put in movie, overtime this weekend, Bob?
Yeah, he was 2 weeks away from retirement.
Yeah.
He only wanted to kill Cray. And again, that mirrors Hero from earlier in the movie, where he wants to kill Callahan, even ripping out Baymax's personality chip, just to make him a soulless robot to kill.
I think that the team is unforgivably naive in that scene.
Go on.
They're immediately... I mean, granted, I think that, of course... they don't use the word kill. They say destroy or something, because the Disney
it's a Disney movie,
movie
and we gotta keep
kids.
This PG.
Yeah. But the team is immediately like, you know, no, this is not what we signed up for. I'm not here to hurt a person. We just wanted to get the mask. And I'm like, you were training for combat with fire and acid. And like, laser knives that can cut through any substance. I don't know exactly what you thought you were doing.
They said they were just there to apprehend, to arrest, even though they're not cops, but still.
I'm sorry, but you do not bring laser knives that can cut through vibranium to a I'm going to rip your mask off fight.
I don't think even Hero wanted to kill Callahan until he realized what Callahan was responsible for. Like he was all set. Okay, we're gonna get him. We're gonna subdue him. We're gonna turn him over to the authorities because he stole my stuff. But now we find out that he intentionally set the fire.
Yeah.
He intentionally stole my bots, and he intentionally killed my brother.
I'm not saying that any of them went there with the intention to kill. But they're all of a sudden, every one of them is like, no, we all came here with the intention to be pacifists. And I'm like, you all showed up with deadly weapons. You can have the best of intentions. You can try to go for non-lethal force. And I'm always saying that, you know, if force is necessary, non-lethal should definitely be what you're going for. Mm-hmm. But the second that, you know, force is there's a chance. Mm-hmm. especially if you show up to the fight with a flamethrower and, like, acid bombs and stuff, and knives that can cut through anything. You are literally bringing deadly weapons with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you didn't show up with, like, rattan, you know, practice weapons or something.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't show up with a boffer sword. They're not, you know, pulling out pull noodles and being like, you know, harass him until he gives us the mask. They're showing up with actual deadly weapons to this fight. Even if it's accidental, there is a chance of serious bodily harm and or death. You gotta be prepared for that. And to say, like, well, we didn't come here to hurt anybody. No, that may not be your intention. But you're going to be super naive if you're coming to throw hands. Your hands have deadly weapons. You know what I'm saying?
I see. I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Now, granted, Hero crossed a line. And they were correct to stop him and Baymax at that point. But, you know, don't be taking the super high ground there. You are on middle ground at best.
And in a way, Baymax kind of goes against programming in a way by locking that disk drive for the rest of the film. He no longer trusts Hero.
That is a fascinating failsafe that Tadashi put in there, and I'm wondering why he felt that was necessary.
Like, because it's a robot. He put that robot in the wrong hands. Tadashi's not stupid.
I don't know. Things only get added when they need to be added, you know?
Baymax has four drives in that chest plate. So there was room for four discs. We only saw two put in there. The one for the healthcare and the one for the fighting. So who knows what the other two were going to be for.
This is, once again, another movie about kind of learning that it's not all about you.
Because he straight up leaves his team on this island to get his own revenge on Callahan.
Yeah, and you left your team on Alcatraz, dude. What is wrong with you?
Yeah, luckily Fred was able to get a lift, but if they hadn't, they would have still been there for the rest of the movie.
Yeah, if Fred wasn't Batman, you would be in trouble.
Fred's father is Batman.
If Fred wasn't Robin, you would be in trouble.
and it's really not until Baymax shows Tadashi's training videos, almost the experimental videos of how much of himself he put into Baymax to make him the best medical professional possible. And I just love that whole, it's kind of been there for the whole movie where it's like, Tadashi is here. And it's that seeing how much care and love that Tadashi put into Baymax to help so many people that Hero gets it. You know, this, we you know, yes, you can be a, you know, we need to do, use our skills to help other people. And it's even at the end of the movie where they become the city's official superhero team.
I think that the whole team kind of learns it in a way. Tadashi was the only part of the group that was actually thinking externally. The others were doing their research based on what was interesting to them. Go-Go, she really likes bikes. She likes speed. She likes racing cars. She, you know. Mm-hmm. So she uses electromagnetics to make a faster bike. That's not to, like, help other people go fast. She wants to go fast. Wasabi is kind of interested in his own thing, you know. So he wants everything in its place and into, you know, tiny little slices and tiny little, you know. So he's working on, you know, his thing. Honey Lemon just really likes chemical reactions. She just wants to watch how it works. It doesn't seem to have any practical use to anybody else. She just wants to see what happens if you mix A and B.
And Fred just wants to be a kaiju.
Yeah, Fred just wants to be in a costume spinning signs. It's fun. Tadashi, what's the first thing he says when Baymax works?
You're going to help people.
You're going to help so many people. Not like, I did it, I'm going to be famous, the professor's going to like me, I'm going to get such a good grade. You are going to help so many people. You know, when he's talking to Hiro, you can tell he's passionate about the, you know, carbon fiber frame, and oh, this kind of polymer, and that kind of battery, and... Mm-hmm. But his first thought when it worked, you're going to help so many people.
I think it's coming from what he said to Hiro, also in that part of the movie, look at things from a different angle. It's possible that he was like the other students where he just wanted to build a really cool robot. And then he looked at it from another angle and said, well, I could use this robot to help people. And maybe something happened with the parents. We don't know. We're never told. They are just mysteriously dead. But he wanted to make this robot that could be a doctor. He didn't want to create a robot that could be a war machine. He didn't want to create a robot that could destroy. He wanted to make a robot that could preserve.
And give you a hug.
And give you a hug.
We need to get
Baymax and Olaf together. But I don't know how the warm hug would work with Olaf
Just tell him that's a warm hug. He doesn't know the sensation of warm. Just don't turn the warmer on.
Okay.
And just tell him that's a warm hug. Warm is a feeling you feel in your heart. You know? It's not a lie. I mean, it is a feeling you feel in your heart.
Yeah.
But when we see the team come together at the end, when they rework all their inventions into their superhero get-ups, I mean, except for Fred, who just wants to be a kaiju, they turn their individual kind of niche things into what will help the team. Mm-hmm. You know, Gogo wants to go fast, but now it's something that is useful, you know, as a kind of superhero part of a team. Mm-hmm. You know, now the knives are more useful in, you know, fighting and protecting. Mm-hmm. Now the chemistry is useful into what will help you bounce higher or be a trap or, you know, create a slippery surface to go faster or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it becomes less about what is interesting to me personally and what more helps and is used to the team, which I find interesting. I mean, they don't have the greatest character arcs compared to Hiro, you know. They're all rather kind of shallow characters in the sense of they don't really get full arcs.
They're very one-dimensional for most of this movie.
Yeah, which is fine, because it's Hiro's movie. You know, they are there to support, you know, his journey, which is okay. If they have any kind of arc, it is seen through that. You know, the reworking of their, you know, their upgrades.
Even in the final battle, where Hiro is telling them to use their gear in a different way, that helps them get out of the situations that they're in with the microbots.
Yeah, which I love. Don't just think of it in the kind of linear, it's all about me kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, because they're too caught up in their own situation. But once they kind of stop and think about it in the larger situation of not only what is happening to me, but what is happening to the other people as well, then they're able to kind of figure out a solution to their own individual problems. And then it is fascinating to me that the solution to ending what's going on kind of with the villain is also not to destroy the machine, but to save the person inside of it.
We find out that Abigail, Callahan's daughter, is alive, has been in stasis all this time. We don't know how long this has been, but she's been in, and she's alive, and they're going to go get her. Yeah, the easy thing would have been destroy the Stargate and stop the destruction. But it's Baymax that says, "Hey, there's someone in there. We gotta save her." And they go and save her. And it's, I hate saying the word cop out in this one, because I get it. It's a Disney movie, and they needed to have that keep that rating. So you have to have the daughter be alive at the end. And you kind of have the cop-out with Baymax, too. But it feels like it would have had a bigger emotional weight if either Abigail's death stood, or at least Baymax's did.
I am going to disagree. Disney is a canoe of douche. Just a giant, maybe like a Disney cruise, just filled and constructed of douche. When it comes to dead family members, and to see them not do that even on this tiny, tiny, tiny scale, just this once. Maybe I'm for that. Hero has suffered enough in this film. Maybe the orphan kid who just watched his brother die, and like, let him have this win. I am okay with it. I don't care if it's a cop out. I am okay with it. I support it. Good job. Thank you, Disney. Because I think the end of this movie needed to not be about destruction in order for the moral of the story to really hit home. You can't have this movie end with destroy the Stargate being the solution. They destroy the Stargate off screen. We don't see that.
It explodes as soon as they get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's its own thing. Yeah. We need the big finale to be the saving of a life.
In Hero's mind, he just now sees Baymax as an extension of Tadashi. So with Baymax making the sacrifice, it's like he's losing Tadashi all over again.
Yeah, if you finally and permanently kill Baymax at this point, you have just killed this kid's parents and his brother twice. Mm-hmm. In one movie. Mm-hmm. You monster. I do not support that. That is not a line I will cross with you.
And it's Baymax that makes the call. He says, the only way anyone's getting out of here is if I stay behind because my jetpack's broken, but I can get you out with my rocket fist.
Yeah.
But I can't do that until you tell me to shut down. And that whole point where Hero is saying, no, I'm not going to lose you too. I've already lost enough. But then realizes that, like you said, it's not about him. Because now he's got Abigail right underneath him. He has the option to save this woman's life. To potentially reunite a father and daughter. Yes, the father is going to jail, but still. And he makes that choice right then and there. Yes, I'm satisfied with my care. Just, he's willing to lose Baymax just to save this person's life.
Yeah, the only thing that we don't know is how did Baymax slipped the chip into his fist. Is there an internal access that he can, like, shunt that around internally?
And as we saw earlier in the movie, once you take that chip out, there goes that personality. how did he take it out and still have his personality?
Well, he doesn't actually do anything after he detaches from the Rocket Fist. He's just kind of there. There is no personality because he doesn't have a secondary
how is he
chip
talking?
At that point.
How is he still in his, I cannot shut down until you tell me you're satisfied with my care, when that programming would be in the fist?
I don't think it is. That's what I'm saying. I think there's an internal access port. I think he says, I need you to say I'm satisfied with my care, and I think he does, and then I think there's like some kind of internal, it's the only way it makes sense.
How was that chip not crushed in that fist?
I don't know, I think we're just gonna have to not think about it.
Anyway, so yeah, we get that big moment, that hero moment, for lack of a better term, where we get Abigail and she's alive, and we don't get the reunion between father and daughter, which is kind of sad, at least on screen.
Yeah. I think it's enough to know that at some point in the future they will reunite.
Mm-hmm. But she is alive, she is fine. And at the end, while Hero is now part of Nerd School, setting up his own gear in the lab, it's the way the movie frames it, it's implied he has a dorm, but even Tadashi still lived at home while going to the school.
Well, so, I don't know. I think maybe finding out that our professor stole your tech and murdered your brother, there might have been a very large settlement. I mean, possibly. We know that they named the building after Tadashi.
Yeah, in the credits it does show that.
Yeah. I'm thinking that maybe there was a very large settlement once it came out that, you know, that Callahan stole the tech and murdered a student.
But yeah, and we get the rebuilt Baymax, and it almost like that's what Baymax planned on. Like, you're smart enough to build me a new body. Do that.
Yeah, I'm sure that Tadashi kept notes at home.
Yeah. Unless they were destroyed in the fire.
At home.
Yeah.
I mean, they're nobody keeps... unless you are forced to by some sort of NDA or whatever, which I don't think a school would necessarily have. Some schools do. But I don't think... I would hope Tadashi wouldn't have, but, you know, hopefully he had a backup somewhere. If not, Hero is smart enough to redo it.
And they're going to be heroes full time. They are San Francisco's. Now he can't got me messing the name up.
It's San Froyo. It makes more sense, and it sounds delicious.
Sure, we'll go out to the ice cream shop and get a San Froyo.
Yeah.
So they are San Froyo's new hero team, the Big Hero 6. And the credits show them doing hero stuff because they're heroes now. Nerd heroes, because it's awesome.
All heroes are nerd heroes if you're nerdy enough.
And then we get because it's a Marvel movie, we need a post-credit scene where Fred finds out his dad, Stan Lee, it was a superhero.
I think he might still be. I don't know. He's got a Superman fortress of creepy underwear solitude.
It's implied that he's at the family-owned island all the time. Could it be that he's just still being a superhero in secret?
Well, I think that was the implication, yes. Mm-hmm. That he spends all his time on the superhero island, you know. Or bat cave or whatever. But the thing is that... I don't know. The thing about the underwear is bizarre and creepy and...
I think it was just something to make... Because Fred is supposed to be this weird guy. So they gave him this weird quirk of wearing his underwear 4 days in a row. One way, the other way, inside out, both ways. Which, and then the gag returns at the end where it turns out superhero Stan Lee dad also wears his underwear, his tights, forwards, backwards, inside out, both ways. Yeah. Again, it's just something to make Fred a weird guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre. And it makes very little sense, but it was a cute way to get Stan Lee into the movie. Mm-hmm. So
I think it also adds to Fred's own love of superheroes that we see throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about it from that. But it's a nice little end scene gag. Again, it's Marvel, so they felt that they had to do something really cool with Stan Lee.
I want to know who his dad's supervillain is. He's obviously not protecting Sanfroyo, so where has he been? Like, what is his, like, domain, you know?
Maybe it's a situation like the Justice League, where he's taking care of all over the world.
I don't know.
Who knows? But that was Big Hero 6. So let's ask the question, does Big Hero 6 have the magic?
Yeah, I think it's cute. It's not my favorite Marvel property. It really doesn't have the Marvel feel. This is definitely more the Disney feel. Mm-hmm. This is very Disney.
It's Marvel through the eyes of Disney.
Yeah. But this is kind of what I wish more superhero stuff could be. I'm always advocating for superheroes in therapy and, you know, looking at it differently and not in the kind of grimdark way. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what I want more superheroes to be. I want superheroes to be like, but what fun? If we provide, not just fun, but like, but what if my superhero provided healthcare? But what if the robots were in fact an exosuit to help disabled people? You know, which they never really thought. I mean, they sort of thought of in the movie, but then they gave it to abled people. It's actually abled people using it as an exosuit, but they never actually thought of the true implication of that. So, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's almost there. It's so close, you know. I just wish they'd take it the one step further. But I do like this. It's cute, and I want, like, two of Baymax, at least. My life would improve overnight so much if I just had, you know,
a two Baymaxes?
Yeah, just a couple of Baymax to help out.
I agree. This movie definitely has the magic of the modern Disney movies. This is definitely one of the better ones. I would definitely say so. In terms of a superhero movie, pretty good. Especially for a kid superhero movie. Especially, you know, one that you can show your kids and one that takes an idea from Marvel that really no one really knew about and turns it into something great. You know, taking take these characters that really no one knew about and just made this wonderful thing out of it. But what if Baymax turned into a dragon in this movie?
I think it would be fun in the flying scene.
So I think that's all we can say about Big Hero 6. So let's move on to next week. Is we are going back to the old school era of Disney, the post-Walt era. We haven't been there in a while. And we're going to talk about a movie that honestly is the most successful movie of the post-Walt era, The Rescuers.
Yeah.
Hopefully this is not the version with the adult frame in it. We'll talk about that next week.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Come back next week for The Rescuers, and we will talk to you all next time.
Ba-la-la-la-la.
Kiki, I am satisfied with my care.
I am too.
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.